Welcome, friends and fellow people who don't like to read without pictures, to the Kablam Podcast. I'm your host, Captain Jack, and to my left here is the Skywalker himself, fucking Motorman Dave. What's up, Dave?
What's up, Jackson?
Yeah, we're going to be spitting and co-hitting the comic book and magazine, reviewing books, covering news, and talking trash. So listen, enjoy, call us assholes if you want, you know, whatever, fuck us. This is a show, shit, whatever.
I'd rather y'all call me an asshole, at least. rather
fuck us. So what's going on today, Dave, in the news?
Oh, shit, not too much. I mean, fucking, you know, not too much going on in the manga world, not too much going on in anime.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Well, on the west side here. All the ladies on the west side. Netflix has announced this week that they're producing 4 Marvel TV shows that's going to lead into a Defenders miniseries. So they're sort of doing kind of what they did with the Avengers, but on a TV scale, which I think is pretty badass.
So, yeah, what's the Defenders?
Well, essentially what this TV show is going to be is Daredevil, Luke Cage, which Luke Cage is a big black dude. He's got steel hard skin, super strength, everything like that. Mm. Iron Fist, who's a like super karate master, but he's a white dude. So interesting twist there. And Jessica Jones, who is a super heroine who doesn't really want to be a super heroine. I think the whole idea is they're kind of like the Avengers, but more on like a street crime level, kind of more like a Batman-ish type Avengers.
That's kind of badass.
I know. See, I think it's going to be cool. Hopefully, I don't know if you've watched the S.H.I.E.L.D. show, the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Mm. I've been less than impressed. It's not very good. It's actually really terrible. So hopefully these are a lot better than this.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. show, what's that one all about?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the Avengers, you know, you had the Agent Coulson and everything. He came back to life in the S.H.I.E.L.D. show, and he's got, like, a group of young people that he's running around with and solving mysteries and stuff. Like,
solving Scooby. Mysteries. It's like the, what do you call it?
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo. What were those young kids in these novels, these little books, we solved mysteries. It was like Scooby-Doo, only...
Like Encyclopedia Brown, or...?
No, it was, shit. Can't remember what they were called. The something brothers, I think.
Oh, Hardy Boys.
The Hardy Boys, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like a sci-fi Hardy Boys. They're just running around, saying all this confusing techno babble, saying really poorly written lines, things like that. So, hopefully... If they're doing it on Netflix, Netflix has had some generally good shows, like they've done House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, things like that, that are a bit more critically acclaimed, a bit better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully it's a bit more like that rather than what Marvel's already done.
Okay.
Second off in the news here, we've got essentially Marvel has come out with a new Ms. Marvel character. Who is a Muslim. They've announced that the new Ms. Marvel is going to be a Muslim. I can't remember what her name is, but it's something Khalid-ish, something kind of like that. I'm trying not to be racist, but I believe that's literally what it is.
Now, is there a reason why she's a Muslim? I mean, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, you know, they're trying to, you know, appeal to everybody, which is, you know, cool and everything,
and so
you know.
We got a whole bunch of hate towards Muslims.
Yeah,
and
you know.
It's like, let's make them feel better.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're reading a comic book and you're a Muslim kid, it's like, oh, the only person I can look towards is, like, the Muslim bad guy that Captain America is punching in the face. And it's like, that's my hero, so. And they're trying to give people a little bit more like that. But I think they're giving her kind of shitty powers, though, is the problem. You know, the old Ms. Marvel had, you know, she could shoot energy blasts, she had super strength, she could fly, she's like Superman, but with energy powers.
Badass.
I know, this new one, she can make her hands and feet really big.
Oh my god. Okay. Did you say she could shapeshift too?
I think she should be able to shapeshift, but from the pictures that they put out, it looks like her main thing is making her fists big.
Okay, so...
I think the moral of the story here on this one is that if you it's okay to appeal to everybody, but when you do, make those characters as cool as the white people. I mean, they gave her shitty powers.
Well, okay, her superpower is kind of like a Wonder Twin, you know, like she can shapeshift into things, which that's pretty fucking lame. Okay, the Wonder Twins kind of sucked, you know. I saw one episode where he morphed into a fucking pail of water. Okay, so there's levels here. Okay, but
yeah, but I mean, when you morph, you've got to be able to, like, do cool things with your morphing, like Plastic Man or, you know, some Mystique or some shit like that. You know, turn it into a bucket of water or an eagle or, you know, something lame like that.
Well, I want to be a fucking eagle, but a pail of water?
Yeah, a pail of water is just, I mean, anything that the dude never turned into was, or a waterfall. Rain.
Yeah, the dude, that was the dude's job.
I know, it's like the girl would be like, stupid. I'll turn into a silverback gorilla and rip his head off. And the guy's like, I'll be the sponge that'll clean up the mess.
Like a blade of grass or some shit like that.
Yeah, something completely worthless. Well, I think that's all we got here on the Muslim story here this week. And I think that's all we have for our news portion, by the way, which we like to call our POW section of the podcast. A little onomatopoeia there for you. We're moving on to the BIF section of the podcast here, our bi-weekly rundown of either comics that have come out this week or sometimes comics that are a little bit older here, and also mangas, which David here, he's got a manga, Hito Kotaro, something like that. Fucking, I don't know. But he's got it reviewed. I read it too. It seems like a pretty snazzy story here, so he's going to tell us what he thinks.
All right, so the manga is called Hito Katana. Not sure if any of you really heard of it. It's sort of underground. I found it by chance, and I think it's pretty awesome. Basically, what you got going on are these androids that were meant for constructive/medical purposes. They were being manufactured as combat-oriented models, known as Katana. And basically, what happens is that you have a person who operates it called a Kenshi. And a Kenshi makes his soul go into the machine and therefore operate it. So, chapter one is Katana, and it's introduced by three characters. You got Tagusa, which is the main character. He appears to be, he's responsible. He does housework. He's kind of a, he's like the,
bitch.
He's like, yeah, pretty much. He's like a bitch, okay? he does a lot of cooking and stuff, so I guess, yeah, he's a bitch. Anyways, and then there's Ain, and she's Tagusa's partner, and partner as in they're in a organization called the AKCD, which stands for Anti-Katana Crime Division, because you got all these people who are manning katanas, and they're causing crime and shit, and they're an organization that go in Katana and stop it, basically.
Alright.
So you got Tagusa, main character, Ain, which is, she's a little bit more, she's more careless. She enjoys alcohol quite a bit. From the first chapter, that's what I can see.
Yeah, she definitely seemed like a little bit of an alcoholic here.
Yeah, a little bit.
And also, I feel like I put down the guy a bit too much by calling him a bitch. From what I read, it seemed like he was trying to be a bitch so that he could get to a little bit of pussy. So, you know, I'm not to take away too much from the dude.
Later on in the chapter, he comes out to be a little bit of a badass. We have the third character. He's the swordsmith. His name is Sukiyama, my bad. Refer to him as Oya-san. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know Japanese worth shit. But Oya-san means old man. He has a bit of a temper. but anyways, these three people all together are known as Squad 7, or the 8th Squad. There are, I can't remember how many squads there are. I've read a little bit more into the series, but it's been a while, so that's why we're following along. Anyways, the chapter starts off as Tagusa and Aang, they're capturing somebody in a katana. They didn't really specify who this katana was or who was manning it. It was just more bringing in, this is the team, they're badasses, watch them do this. And then later on, they go home, they bring up a little bit of character development, you know, Tagusa is doing the, or he's cooking, he's doing the dishes or some shit, and Aang's, you know, sitting there drinking, getting drunk, acting all silly. There's plenty of humor in the manga, so that's a nice, it's a good mixture, it's good chemistry, basically.
Definitely, a lot of character development, everything in this first chapter, it seemed.
Exactly, and then they brought in Tsukiyama. Then they get a phone call. You know, they're off their first job, and it's unknown. It's very unknown for, I guess, for them to have a second job. Well, Tsukiyama gets a phone call, and he starts freaking out because they want their team to go out for another thing and or another job, and, you know, they were about to go sit down, drink, have dinner. And so they go out. New villains causing mayhem. And what we can observe is that his left arm is extremely powerful and very deadly and clearly made for destruction. He gets a tracking device sent onto him, so Tsukiyama and the gang can track him. And Aang-san, she goes and prepares a special katana named Suramaru. It's a very tall, lanky katana with long black hair and sharp features. And she shoots, basically shoots her hands as sharp projectiles and retracts them with rope or a cord or whatever. And how she does this is she goes into this machine that Tsukiyama has built or made. And it's about the same size as a car. She sits down into it, and she basically brings this visor over her face. And thus, the soul transfer is engaged, basically. And so her soul leaves her body, enters the katana, and then they're off.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seemed like there was, I don't know if you saw Pacific Rim, but it's got a little bit of a Pacific Rim feel to where, you know, you're kind of sitting around waiting for, you know, these other, you know, robot things to attack. When they do, you know, you grab your coat, you get into your little box thing, and then you transfer your mind into not a giant robot like Pacific Rim, but into a little robot. And, you know, you are inside a little robot, you go in and you fight these other robots. It looks pretty badass.
Is that what Pacific Rim's all about?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't fighting robots, but they were in giant robots fighting monsters. It was very Power Rangers-esque.
Oh, yeah.
Except it kind of had a kind of feel of this manga here to where, you know, they kind of were like firefighters sitting around waiting for this to happen.
Man, Power Rangers were the shit.
Oh, man.
But anyways, they head out. They're after this guy, and they're led to an abandoned warehouse. And, you know, they're searching for this guy, and they're looking on their tracker, and they're like, oh, he should be right here in front of us. And apparently he took the tracker off of him and placed it onto a pillar, which leaves them confused, and they're like, shit, where the fuck is this guy? And he makes a sneak attack. The katana that they're trying to find makes a sneak attack and smashes Tagusa into a pillar, and thus fucking him up. Or so, you know, that's what it seems like. And Suramaru deflects and dodges attacks from this katana, like it ain't no thing, and attacks with her projectile hands, which is badass as shit.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. So, and then the katana dodges it and grabs a pillar and launches it into Aang-san and is like, take this, bitch. And she's like, okay. She's trying to dodge it. She doesn't dodge it. She gets her smash turned into hamburger, basically.
Nice.
By a huge concrete slab. It's amazing.
Nice.
And the katana mocks and laughs at them, saying, you know, haha, how much of a joke you are, blah, 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 mentioning that you use a mere human, blah, blah, blah.
A lot of classic supervillain lines. Of
pretty
like,
much, yeah.
You know, I will. You cannot stop me!
It's like, aha! Okay. later on, he finally mentions his fucking name. Kagemitsu is his name, and he's, you know, he's the katana with the overly sized left arm that just fucks everything up. It's wonderful. The criminal goes off on a tangent at this point, talking to Ainsan about how katana is used as a power. It's pure weapons, basically, in his eyes, and how using them for medical and constructive purposes was just an illusion. He clearly has something mentally wrong with him, but he basically lost his soul in his katana, and therefore he's stuck in there. And he just lost his mind and he killed his swordsmith. And right after that little scene, Tagusa appears out of nowhere, and surprised that a human could be alive after a hit from Kagemitsu's left arm, Tagusu explains he is half katana, half human. So there's a cool little twist, pretty badass.
A little bit of cyborg action going on.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, holy shit.
You're like, whoa, I thought this dude, you know, from earlier was a bitch who was trying to, you know, get a little bit of pussy, a little bit of pussy whipped type of guy. But now he comes out all RoboCop on us.
Oh, hell yeah. It's badass. And the art is phenomenal. I can't remember who the artist was. Something
Japanese, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's something I can't. Yeah, I'll get back with you on that. It's something I can't really pronounce. It's pretty. It's pretty confusing.
Pretty involved.
But anyways, Tagusa uses katana that seems to come out of his hands, basically. Not to be confusing, I'm talking about katana as in the swords that samurai used.
Okay. He doesn't have robots coming
right,
out
he
of his hands.
Yeah, he doesn't shoot out little robots.
I was a little confused. I was like, he's got an extra... I don't remember that. So he had swords coming out of his hands.
Yes.
Fucking chopping shit.
It just kind of slides out, kind of like fucking Wolverine, except for out of his fist. He takes them out of his hands. He actually uses them.
Okay.
And he says... he takes out two. I guess he can take out more because he says two is just enough for this job. And he cuts off Kagemitsu's left arm and brings him down. And that's basically essentially the end. I mean, it shows a little bit more character development at the end because Tagusa and Ain are enjoying the evening, being reminded that being a part of the AKCD is difficult but worth protecting those bittersweet moments that they're enjoying at that very moment. And that's pretty much the end of chapter one.
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it kind of gave you a good setup. I haven't read the rest of the series, but it kind of gives you a good setup of kind of what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. I mean, what'd you think of as far as setup-wise?
I thought the setup was pretty good. I think it sets up a really, really thick... It makes you think, like, it sets up high expectations for it, basically. Now, I haven't read too much manga that's not underground. I've read a lot of mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But for something that is more underground, this, I feel like it should be more recognizable than it is. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm just retarded. Maybe I just think it's underground. Maybe it's the most popular fucking thing in Japan. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, you know way more than me, man. The only manga I've ever read, the closest I've gotten to reading a manga before this is I watched Pokemon when I was a kid.
Well, actually, the manga's pretty cool. The manga's pretty tight.
Yeah, I mean, I've always tried to get into it, but, you know, the reading right to left and all that shit.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, fuck. Damn. Yeah,
it kind of fucks with your mind a little bit. So,
especially from reading comic books. I mean, come on. It's like taking a NASCAR driver and being like, okay, now you're going to do this backwards.
Oh, I'm not like, used to driving. Oh, I'm turning right now? Oh, shit. I've never had to turn right.
Yeah, it just completely fucks things up.
So how many fucks out of five do you give this?
Fucks out of five?
Yeah.
You
give no fucks. You give all your fucks.
Oh, I give... Oh, okay. I give a decent amount of fucks. Probably a 3.5. It's pretty neat.
3.5 fucks out of five?
Now, therefore, that's only basing off the first chapter. I haven't, you know... I need to read the rest of it first. For me, for a series to be good, there has to be a little bit of everything. There has to be, you know, action. There has to be adventure. There has to be romance. I think that's essential for a series to be good. Even if it's just a little bit of it. But so far, I think that there could be something between Ain and Tagusa. I don't know. She's a little flirty with him. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes. And I'm sure there's going to be plenty of other characters that comes in.
Alrighty, so moving on here, I've got a couple of, moving on to the West Coast again, the West Side.
West Side?
I've got a couple comic books here that I'm reviewing. One of them, the first one I'll start off with here is a recent comic book, I believe just came out this month, Superior Spider-Man issue 16. Now, the problem with this here is we're kind of jumping right into the middle of a sort of long-running story here, so I'm going to try and give a little bit of history, but make it kind of quick here. In this world of Spider-Man here, Peter Parker, the guy from the movie that's, you know, in love with Mary Jane and shit, he's dead. And Doc Ock, the guy from the second Spider-Man movie, if you didn't know, has taken over his body. He's put his brain inside of Spider-Man's body. He looks like Peter. He's got all of his powers. He's got all of his memories, all that shit.
That's fucked up.
I know. And he's decided, instead of using this body to do all the villainous stuff he did with his old fat body that couldn't see, He decides to try and be Spider-Man. He wants to be a hero, but he wants to do it his own way, and he wants to prove that he could be a better Spider-Man than Peter Parker ever could, which is why this is called Superior Spider-Man.
Sounds like a dick.
I know.
It's like, okay, I'm going to be your worst villain and make shit just terrible for you. Now, you're dead now. I'm going to fuck your bitch and take your fame.
Yeah, I'm going to fuck everything up for you. Every time you turn around, oh, this Dr. Ock on my dick. And then he fucking kills me. And then he's going to do my job better than me. That kind of suck. But... Essentially, he's been doing this for a while here. He's got himself a snazzy new costume with some black. He looks a little badass. He's also got himself some henchmen, which I loved. And he seems to be building a lot of death machines, doomsday.
Wonderful.
Things that a supervillain would do. So this issue in particular has Superior Spider-Man, Doc Ock Spider-Man, publicly outing the Hobgoblin's identity. Which is a big no-no. Peter Parker would never have done this just because of the, you know, it's kind of an unwritten superhero, supervillain code. Anyways, the pressure is on Phil Urich as his fellow Daily Bugle co-workers start putting it together. Eventually, Spider-Man shows up and Phil proves himself to be the villainous Hobgoblin, and Spider-Man quickly puts him down and turns him over to the authorities. And there's this whole little subplot about a bunch of goblin people down in the sewer. Looks like he's Norman Osborn is back, maybe calling himself the Goblin King, something like that. He breaks Phil out of jail or out of the authorities here and gives him an infinitely lamer name than Hobgoblin and calls him the Goblin Knight. No, what's that shit about? I mean, Hobgoblin is pretty badass. And Goblin Knight, and fuck, whatever.
Goblin Day.
I know, what is this, Game of Thrones or something? Overall, this story is a little, you know, I'm not one who hates on the Superior Spider-Man storyline, but I'd like to see how some of the other writers would have handled this take. I love Dan Slott. I think he's great. You know, I think he's funny. I loved Great Lakes Avengers. That was a fun comic, and maybe we'll review that someday on here. But I'd like to see some other writers handle this. I'd like to see maybe a Bendis, you know, some of the other guys here. I love the continued usage of Doc Ock's, you know, building giant robots, being a mad scientist, and the fact that he has henchmen. That was great.
So does this make him more of a neutral character, or is he just all out good?
He's a bit more of a neutral character. I mean, he's trying to do good things,
yeah,
but in a villainous way.
Well, that's terrible.
I know. So, you know, you don't know. It's kind of in the gray area where you don't know whether you want to root for him. You know, he's kind of like the Punisher. He's not, you know, resistant to killing people if he has to.
Keep things interesting.
Yeah, basically. Definitely. Let's see here. The dialogue in this issue was pretty good. Dan's always very good about that. But the art, which was done by Humberto Ramos, I've never was a big Ramos fan. It's just not my shit. A lot of people like his style. I think it's a little bit too cartoony, and I feel like you just can't really tell what's going on in the background. Everything's a little cluttered and crowded. But that's just my take. You read it, too. I mean, what did you think about the art?
I thought the art was all right. Now, sometimes it was a little, I have to agree with you, it was a little crowded, but I have seen art that was far worse than that.
Oh, definitely.
For example, manga has a lot of black and white stuff,
mm-hmm.
and especially if you're trying to get, like, a huge panoramic view of something, it's really hard to spot what is what. Or if, like, there's an action scene going on, it's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And you kind of have to, like, make it up in your head as you go. I feel like Naruto is really notorious for those kind of scenes. Sometimes you just kind of go with the flow and be like, okay, I can't really make what this is. But, you know, it kind of makes sense. But overall, I thought the art was pretty good. It wasn't the best that I've seen, but I thought it was halfway decent.
Yeah. I mean, I'm being a little nitpicky here. Roberto, I'm sorry. I'm not saying fuck you or go fucking jump in a lake. I'm just saying that's not my shit. I don't like your style. I've seen a lot worse art, but I have seen better art, which I would have rather seen in this issue. I really like Ryan Stegman. Is a good one who also draws this issue, but this wasn't his week. But overall, I give this issue 3 fucks out of 5.
That's what's up.
That's pretty good. It's not bad, but
well, you gave some fucks, you know.
Yeah, I gave a couple fucks. Gave a few fucks.
That's what's up.
That's right. Also, this week I am reviewing a bit of an older issue here, part of the Batman Reborn saga. By Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly. It is Batman and Robin issue 1. Now, I'm going to go ahead and give a little backstory on this one here, because we're jumping in the middle of things. But essentially in the story here, Batman got killed by this intergalactic king named Darkseid. And obviously, back in Gotham City, that kind of, you know, like,
fuck things up,
yeah, really. There's no Batman. All the villains are like, yeah, Batman's gone. Party all night, Garth. And, you know, Nightwing and Bat and Robin and, you know, all the Gotham heroes are trying to stop shit, but they're just not Batman.
Batman is God.
I know.
I just can't be Batman.
You know, no matter how good Nightwing does, you know, when they see Nightwing, they don't run away scared because they know who he is.
Exactly.
If they saw Batman, that would make them think twice about even going out.
This guy.
So,
he kicks ass. So.
That's essentially what they do. Nightwing decides, you know, the only way I'm going to be able to keep things under control is if I dress up like Batman and I become the next Batman. Mm-hmm. Which he does. He takes on Damian, who is Batman's son. His mother was a villain, Talia al Ghul. And he was raised by these assassins. So Damien's a killer. Damn. He's a pretty badass kid.
Shit.
And his mom essentially was like, I can't raise him anymore, Bruce. He's yours now. And, you know, Batman's just got this kid who's been raised as this ninja assassin. And he's trying to teach him to be good. And he's just, you know, he's just been born in this world of, like, you know, kill whoever you can, and
he was,
you know,
born with a switchblade, basically.
Yeah, he was born with a samurai sword. No. So he was just raised by the deadliest assassins, and they've been trying to teach him to do good, and now it's Nightwing's responsibility. They're trying to induct him into the, you know, gang, say, hey, you're a part of this, we want you to be a good guy, and we want you to be on our side. Which is a little bit sweet, I think. But essentially in this issue, it starts out, it introduces us to the new Batman and Robin. We've got a lighthearted and warm Batman accompanied by an insubordinate and borderline murderous Robin. They easily dispatch of Mr. Toad, a new player in Gotham's underworld. Ooh, Mr. Toad essentially is just a toad, but a man-sized. He's got a little British hat. And I guess the interesting thing about him in this issue is he was carrying a suitcase, not full of money, but dominoes. And that sparks the mystery subplot that will go through the rest of this series here. And there's a little touching scene which Gordon believes Batman is dead, but he leaves the signal on just in case. And the end gives us an introduction to a brand new villain, the incredibly creepy Professor Pig, and his red-headed and deformed slaves. Yeah, that was pretty. That was pretty creepy.
That was. He's something else. He's. He's like a. I don't really. Oh, he's just. He's fucked up in the head. That's really all you can really describe him.
Exactly. I mean, he's got like a, looks like a pig's mask on, like a little pig mask. He's got has a bow tie and a shirt. He comes in and he puts these weird, like, doll faces on people, sticks it to their face, and they become his sort of, you know, little dollatrons, he calls them, or their slaves.
So are like henchmen, or are they just do shit for him?
Yeah, you know, kind of his henchmen, you know, they kind of do whatever they want. You know, the drug, whatever drug is on the mask just kind of makes them do whatever he asks.
Jink.
So it's a little bit creepy. A little bit creepy here. Overall, this was a good start to Morrison's psychedelic take on Batman and Robin. Damian is fleshed out a little bit as being an engineering genius, surpassing his father and finishing the flying Batmobile that he never could. And Dick has given a few good lines about always knowing his role as Batman was inevitable. The art, Frank Quietly, as always, is really fucking weird. You know, his style is really visually interesting, goes hand in hand with Morrison's writing style. Good start and an instant classic, in my opinion. It's on my bookshelf. Overall, I give all my fucks. 5 out of 5.
You give 5 out of 5?
5 out of 5. All my fucks.
I don't blame you. First of all, I thought the art was pretty neat. I thought it just flowed well to begin with, anyways. Now, a little bit about the dominoes. Didn't they say they were made out of bones?
Well, I think they talked about the dominoes, like some people, like in the streets, call them bones. Okay. Like, oh, let's play the bones. It's just another name for dominoes.
Too fucking stupid to realize that. I was like, oh, they're made out of bones. Okay, anyways. Okay, so the dominoes, and the story I thought was pretty bleak. Like, it really showed that they were borderline fucked without Batman, because Nightwing, who is now the new Batman, is all, oh, shit, you know, I'm taking on this huge role now. And Damian, the Robin, he's being a dick, being like, I can make a better Batman here. Like, this kid's like 12 years old or some shit.
Exactly.
And, you know, Nightwing looks like he's, I don't know, 20, mid-20s, late-20s. I kicked this kid's ass. But, you know. But the story, I thought, was pretty neat.
Yeah, definitely. And you make a good point there that's not even something that I thought of, that, you know, this issue really kind of, you know, because by the end, it's not like that, you know. You get to know, you know, that these guys do really have what it takes. But this first issue kind of sets up like, damn, Nightwing's got his shit. Like, he's got some shit to do. He's got some big shoes to fill, and
definitely.
Things
Batman,
are fucked up.
Batman was the man. So,
yeah, it's hard to replace Batman,
yeah.
But if anybody can do it, if anybody's qualified, I'd say it was Dick Grayson here. So I think at this point, we're moving on into the Wham! Section, which is our bi-weekly picks of the week, which we go and back and we take a look at some collected works, old or new, and just give them a quick review and tell you why you should go ahead and get them. Sweet action, man.
Hell yeah.
First off, I got David here, fucking Motorman himself, with his review of Brian K. Vaughan's Saga.
Hell yeah. Okay, first of all, Brian K. Vaughan, I've just now dabbed his work, and I think it's absolutely phenomenal. Okay, this guy, I've read through Saga, and I've read through the second volume. I'm not quite sure if the third volume is out yet, but if it is, I'll shit some bricks and I'll go and get it. So I've read a little bit of that. I've read all of that. And so far right now I'm reading a little bit of the Runaways. Is that what it's called?
Yep, definitely. That's what Brian's kind of famous for, is the Runaways here. So you've started off his Runaways work, but you really like Saga, though.
Yeah, Saga, to me, I feel like he's really good at creating characters that are just really dynamic, and he really knows how to make a character unique, and it makes you want to be like, what the fuck's going on with this guy? What the fuck's going on with this guy? It's not just the main character who's interesting. It's the side characters who are just like, holy shit, this guy is, you know, what's he going to do next? But this story is essentially, it's basically an intergalactic Romeo and Juliet. That's basically the best way I can boil it down to. It's about two races. I cannot remember what the races are named. But basically, one race has horns on their head, kind of like steer. And the other race has some sort of wings, kind of like fly wings.
Yeah, bug wings or something.
Right, they look like bugs, basically. It's not like a bird's wing or anything like that. But Alana is the female in the story, and Marco is the male in the story. They fell in love. They're of separate races. Alana's the one with the wings. Marco is the one with the horns. And they have a baby, and she, on the very first, the first thing that happens in Volume 1 is that she's giving birth. She's super adorable. She has little tiny horns with wings. And basically they're on the run because, you know, what they just did is a giant no-no. You don't do that. And they're, you know, they're out to get them. They're out for blood. It's not a good thing that's going on with them. Another character that comes along, her name is Isabel, and she's a ghost on the planet Cleave, and that's where they're trying to escape. That's where the story basically starts, on Cleave, and they're trying to get in the spaceship or try and find some fucking way to get away from mayhem and all the bolts flying everywhere from the family, basically. And like I said, Isabel, there are something on the planet that they're very feared. They're ghosts. They have been known to, like, I don't know, brutally murder people. But I guess what they do is they give off illusions. They make you hallucinate. So they don't kill you per se. They're kind of confusing to really describe. But Isabel is this about 16-year-old girl. She wears this beanie hat, and half of her body is gone, and she has, like, intestines hanging out. She got blown up by a landmine.
Ew.
So, yeah. So she just kind of floats around. She has, like, a really teen attitude, basically, but she wants to leave Cleave. She fucking hates Cleave. And she said, okay, I won't kill you as long as you take me with you. And they're like, oh, well, shit. Okay, well, how the hell are we going to do that? Well, basically, she bonds her soul with Hazel, with their baby. And at first, you know, Alana is like, oh, hell no, you ain't doing this to my child. You know, the whole mother bear thing. And she's like, oh, fine, I'll fucking kill you then. And plus, she knew how to get out, basically. But obviously, she's a ghost. She can't just be like, okay, I'm going to go into a spaceship. No, she's a ghost. So she gets into Hazel, and she's more portrayed as a babysitter, basically. And she knows, throughout the story, she shows that she knows a little bit about taking care of a child. So it's kind of interesting to watch chemistry between her and Alana and Marco and the baby, definitely. Because she has a lot of interactions with Hazel. She plays peekaboo with her, you know, the cute kid stuff. Basically, at this point in time, the chick, Isabel, yes, Isabel takes them to this field. It's like a forest. And she's like, "Well, okay, we're here. This is our escape route." And they're looking at each other like, what are we talking about? What's going on here? This is a fucking forest. There are trees everywhere. I don't see any spaceships." And she's like, "Well, the trees are spaceships." So it's weird. It ties in with Brian K. Vaughan's weird sense of creativity. And that's what I think just stands out the most. Like, something that's so amazing. I don't know. A weird concept, and he makes it make sense.
So very imaginative.
Yeah, definitely. He probably did his fair share of drugs. It's pretty intense about his creativity is pretty intense. So basically, they get inside this tree. This tree can do goddamn anything. It's like a fucking yacht. They shoot off of Cleve, and they're leaving. They have a little bit of issues going on. They got these armies going after them. And they also have these bounty hunters coming after them. And they have, they're very interesting. One is this chick with, like, six eyeballs. And she has multiple legs and arms, too. She's like a spider. It's kind of creepy.
Weird.
Yeah, I forget her name.
Spider-Woman. We'll go with Spider-Woman.
We'll go with Spider-Woman, yes. And the other one is I think his name is Will. And he has this interesting little companion with him. Will is a badass, by the way. Will, you don't fuck with Will, okay? He's known for a lot of his mercenary work. He's known for a lot of his getting shit done and getting his shit done quickly and on time and thoroughly. But anyways, he has this companion called the Lion Cat. And I guess the Lion Cat, he could tell when somebody's lying, obviously, hence the name. But he'll say lying, or sorry. He'll say sorry a lot, too. I don't really know why. Just maybe because he's an asshole. And he says you're lying, and he says sorry or some shit. I don't know.
So he's a cat?
Yeah, he's a cat. He's like an overgrown blue cat.
And you can tell whether you're lying.
Yeah.
Fucking, I wish my cats did that.
I know, right?
My cat doesn't do anything but shit in a box. This cat is like a lie detector. He is Golden a lie lasso. Detector. Wonder Woman's lasso.
Exactly. It's pretty badass. It's pretty awesome. No. He's a character. Like I said, Brian K. Vaughan makes characters no matter what the hell they are. I mean, this is a cat, for Christ's sake. And you're just like, this cat's fucking awesome. Can tell when you're lying or not. So it's pretty neat. And then do you watch what's the TV show The Big Bang Theory?
No, I don't.
Okay, well apparently one of the characters, I don't watch The Big Bang Theory either, but I saw on one of the forums that somebody wore a shirt with the Lion Cat on it. It was pretty cool. It was like, "Oh, look, it's from the graphic novel saga." But anyways, that's basically all that happens in that volume. Oh, the last part that happens, they're in the spaceship, they're floating away, they're getting away from this planet, and all of a sudden, somebody, it's like an instant transmission type Dragon Ball Z bullshit that they just appear inside the spaceship. And let it be known, it is Marco's mother and father. And he finds out, or they find out, that Marco is with the other race, and so they You don't really know until you get the second volume. You don't really know their opinion about it. But yeah, it just leaves a cliffhanger going on from there.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Who does the art?
Who does the art? The artist is. Hold on. Well, Fiona Staples.
Oh, a chick. She does the art.
Ooh. Yes, chick.
Yeah. You don't get a lot of that in the comic book world.
You don't really?
Not a whole lot of women artists. There's a few, but.
I think she does amazing. One of the things that I think is really visually striking about her work is facial expressions.
Oh, really?
I think the facial expressions that she does for these characters are pretty top-notch. They're just real. They look real. And you're just like, for a second, you can kind of base off what they're feeling, their emotions, for what they say, but it gives you that little oomph just looking at their facial expressions.
Definitely.
But it's also by Image. Image Comics.
Okay, Image. Image does this. All right. Image that has been traditionally known for stuff like Spawn and Witchblade and shit like that. You know, they usually have a lot of boobs and guns.
Another thing, this saga is definitely not for kids. There's really fucked up parts. And there's a lot of boobs, lots of violence, but, you know, who gives a shit? Yeah. Go read it.
If you're a kid, you shouldn't be listening to this,
because
we've said fuck probably 20 times already, but...
More than that.
So, how many fucks out of five do you give this, David?
Oh, I definitely give it 5 fucks.
5 fucks out of five? You give all your fucks.
I care so much, I just fuck.
Oh, wow.
I would fuck it. I'd fuck this... You know, graphic novel. Good.
I mean, I thumbed through it. I didn't read it all the way. But, at first glance, just thumbing through it, it kind of looked sort of maybe like a magical Lord of the Rings-like world. But, you know, after I looked at it a bit more, you could see that it's very much like a more Star Warsian type world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a lot... You can compare it a lot with Romeo and Juliet. It has that, Capulet and Montague type quarreling going on, only there's this huge intergalactic war, so...
Definitely.
But yeah, it's intense. So I'd definitely check it out.
All right, so that is Saga, and that's Volume 1?
Yes.
All right. Volume 1. Volume 1 of Saga by Brian K. Vaughan is Dave's pick for the week. Mine, going... Well, I guess we're not even going back to the West Coast here, because that was a West Coast comic. going back to me here, I've got Wolverine Old Man Logan by Mark Millar and Steve McNiven. This story essentially starts out in a post-apocalyptic future where all the villains have teamed up about, I think, maybe 20 years ago or so and killed all the heroes and took over the world. Split it up, cut it up like a cake. Each one has a little piece of the United States here. Wolverine, who survived that whole ordeal, lives with his family in a ravaged farm in Sacramento. For some reason, which it's not apparent to us at the beginning, but we learn by the end of the book, Wolverine hasn't popped his claws, or Logan hasn't popped his claws in 20 years ever since that night and shit. When his landlords and the inbred descendants of the Hulk and his cousin She-Hulk demand their rent, Logan is forced to set out on a cross-country job with his old friend Hawkeye, who is blind now and sports like this badass, long hair and beard, and he can also drive, even though he's blind, which is pretty awesome, too. But along the way here...
He's Hawkeye. He's blind.
I know. He can shoot arrows and shit with deadly accuracy, even though he's blind. That's the type of shit that Millar writes. It's like, this guy is so badass that even though he's blind, he can still do this shit.
Yes, and in case you were planning on rewinding it to hear it again, yes, he said inbred. He said inbred Hulk family.
Yes, the interesting thing about this family here They're inbred descendants of the Hulk and his cousin She-Hulk, and they're all rednecky. Like, they got trucker hats, sleeveless shirts, jacked up teeth. They look like, you know, Duck Dynasty, but green and straight giant.
Snaggletooth. No, they look worse than Duck Dynasty. These guys, they're rough, okay?
Rough. Like, type of guys that'll rape you in the woods.
Oh, yeah. Dude, they'll do so much.
Definitely squeal like a pig shit. Along the way, they encounter Kingpin, Dr. Doom, and a fucking Venom dinosaur, which is one of my favorite moments. Once they reach Washington, D.C., shit goes down, Hawkeye gets shot in the head, and Wolverine ends up being captured by the White House's current resident, the Red Skull. Captain America villain, Nazi from the 40s there. Aww. Wolverine cuts the Nazi's head off with Captain America's shield, and escapes back to the West Coast using Iron Man's armor. Surviving the entire trip without popping the claws, he arrives at the farm with his rent money just in time to discover that the Hulks have went back on their word and murdered Logan's family anyways. Then comes one of the most badass splash pages I've ever read. It's just a full page spread of the onomatopoeia snicked. The sound that generally in comics is, you know, the sound of Wolverine's claws coming out. Just across the whole page there, just, you know, like gravy.
Oh, he's pissed.
He's pissed. And the rest of the book, I think there's two issues left after that. Wolverine just tears apart this army of redneck Hulk kids until he meets the final boss, which is Bruce Banner. And he's not the Hulk, just Bruce Banner, just a skinny old man, gray hair and glasses, but he just beats the shit out of Wolverine was the Hulk.
He kind of comes out with his little, his walker. He's like,
you guys are making too much noise out here. What's going on?
He definitely looks like a little old man with a cane and a wife beater on. He's all skinny, and he just beats the shit out of Wolverine. Wolverine gets the upper hand. Banner turns into the Hulk, like an old version of the Hulk, and he eats Wolverine, and he thinks he's won. He sat back, and his stomach starts getting upset. Wolverine comes popping out of his stomach like a baby, ripped the Hulk all in half and shit.
Wait, like a baby? Babies?
Maybe I haven't seen a live birth. Maybe. Maybe. Alien, like an alien.
Like the Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, like when the alien pops out of somebody's chest, this was Wolverine and the Hulk.
I mean, if you said like a baby, it'd be like somebody picture like a vagina and he just kind of like
comes out. Yeah, he just pops out of the Hulk's vagina.
But naked, bare ass and everything.
Definitely. So he dispatches of him quite gruesomely and then walks into the sunset a la Clint Eastwood. This was an extremely enjoyable romp through a wacky and ultra-violent Marvel universe. If you like Millar's works such as Wanted, The Ultimates, and Kick-Ass, this is for you. My only complaint is that sometimes it goes too far in its outrageous violence. Like, I'm serious. This is the thing with Millar. He can be really awesome if he's tamed a little bit. This goes a bit too far. I mean, somebody getting their head cut off with a shotgun is, I mean, there was one issue of the Ultimate Avengers that he wrote where somebody just chucks a baby out of a window.
Oh, my God.
I know. He will just go, like, a little bit too far.
Damn.
Somebody get. I wish I had it with me that I could show you the scene of it's the Red Skull again, and he just has this baby, just chucks him out the window.
What comic are we talking about?
This is an Ultimate Avengers.
Oh my God.
So, you know, it's got Captain America and War Machine and shit in it. And so it's not a weird comic. This was like a main comic.
Damn.
And they got babies falling out of windows.
All over the place.
They've got a dude cutting his own face off. They had all kinds of shit.
That is wonderful.
I know.
I'd have to agree. I think the art is phenomenal. Like, and most of the time, like, a lot of newer art, I think, is really good. I don't really like any of the older type issue stuff. But I'll have to agree with you on the taking it too far. It's really fucking gory. But honestly, there were no babies being thrown out the windows. I mean, I could see how that could offend somebody. But I find too much gore, or just a fuck ton of gore, almost comical. And I think that if gore can make me laugh, I think that that's just better, honestly.
And, yeah, I mean, like what you mentioned with the art there, mm-hmm. Steve McNiven is really awesome artist. You know, that's part of what I felt the gruesomeness was. I mean, at least to me, mm-hmm. that he was such a good artist that it looked really real.
Yeah, the shit looks real. It really does.
A lesser artist would have made it look less gruesome, which is the thing here. But yeah, a lot of people, when this came out, thought that this, you know, they touted it as the Wolverine's Dark Knight Returns, which I think kind of gave people improper expectations for it, which is kind of why, you know, I don't think a lot of people, when it first came out, liked it. But I thought it was great.
Wait, Wolverine, Dark Knight Returns?
Yeah, I mean, Batman...
So Wolverine and Batman are in the same...
No, not necessarily... Essentially, Batman had a classic story back in the 80s called Dark Knight Returns.
Okay.
That was kind of about his future, you know, and he went back and he fought the Joker and everything one last time. He was an old man and he fought and beat Superman.
Oh.
And, yeah, it was, generally most comic fans consider that the best of all time. They thought this was going to be sort of Wolverine's version of that. You know, mm-hmm. Wolverine coming in, fighting, you know, the Hulk and things like that. And that, it wasn't quite as good as The Dark Knight Returns, but I thought it was still great. I mean, I give it 4 out of 5 bucks myself.
Hey, man.
Four out of five bucks. It's nearly perfect.
Yeah.
It's nearly perfect. It's on my bookshelf.
It's on his bookshelf.
Yep. I got comics that are in a box, and I got comics that are on a bookshelf. So
poor comics.
Definitely.
In the box.
You love me.
I display some, and I throw the others into hell, really.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, comics. Now to move on to our blam section.
Blam!
We're getting near the end here. We've only got one more section to go. Blam, our bi-weekly TV and movie picks. This is where we, talk about comics that have been turned into TV shows, movies, manga that's been turned into TV shows. And first off here, I believe David, he watched an interesting show here called Basquatch.
Basquatch.
Basquatch. Go ahead and tell us what's been going on there, David.
I only watched the first episode, so I can't really necessarily give it a full rating. But first of all, I found it on a website, and I think the pictures that I saw were interesting, but I think they were to a different anime because I clicked on it and I was just like, "What the fuck is this?" But I guess the producer, I don't remember his name, he does a lot of mech-type animes. And okay. So I saw one, and I was like, oh, this is cool. So it's an anime that exists, the one that caught my eye, but I clicked on the wrong link, and it brought me to Basquatch. And it's basically about this kid who has he's homeless, and he's living with his sister, or he's not homeless, he's just in poverty, and he's... he hates basketball now. He plays basketball. He plays basketball really well. But I guess now in the future they have machines that play basketball. It's kind of like, it's like the ironic part. Like, oh, machines are taking over our jobs. And it's
okay,
like.
So they were like, all right, LeBron, I'm sorry, you're laid off.
It's like,
we're bringing in LeBronBot 2000 here.
that's pretty much what it is. It's kind of goofy. It's kind of silly. But it's very visually striking. Because first of all, okay, I don't know Japanese, so I have to read everything in subtitles. But it's really hard. It's really easy to miss something in the text because there's so much shit going on in the anime that your eyes just be like, ooh, look, what's over here? What's over here? And it's drawn, or just the animation I don't know, it's good. It reminded me a little bit of Afro Samurai, only without, it's not as edgy as Afro Samurai. It was kind of like a mix between Afro Samurai and probably Samurai Champloo.
Okay.
That's weird. But I thought the art was pretty neat. The animation was pretty neat. But anyways, going off on a tangent there, it's about this kid who passionately hates basketball now because it's just boring to him. And actually, it is pretty boring. You got all these machines that are stumbling around chasing this basketball that's rolling, literally. And it bugs him. And I guess what he does to make a living is smash all these TVs that broadcast basketball, because basketball is just huge right now for some reason. It's super successful for some reason. And he takes these little microchips that are inside the TVs and turns them into this guy, and he gives them cash for it. And I think, like I said, I only saw the first episode, but I think he's super bitter towards them because I think his sister got into an accident playing basketball with one of them, which to me is a no fucking brainer. You don't play basketball with something that is like two stories tall, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. So I guess her legs got, she's paralyzed or something. Her legs got chopped off, something like that. So he's super bitter. He's like, man, you guys came in to see and fucked my sister up.
Yeah. It'd be fairly dangerous playing basketball with LeBron, who is 6'9". He, you know, he may fall on your legs wrong and break your legs anyway.
Probably.
So now an iron LeBron is going to be even worse.
Exactly. You just don't do that shit. So he's in a shady mood about it. And he meets this girl who has ginormous boobs. And that's basically all you see are just her huge boobs.
Boobies!
Okay, so yeah, this is definitely interesting.
It's interesting now.
I think at this point I do want to watch the second episode.
Oh my god. But she ends up being a childhood friend of this main character. I can't even remember his name.
Oh, how have you grown?
Yes, exactly. And he's like, I couldn't recognize you because you're tits are so big, you know, crude humor. But he, also another character, it's really interesting, I don't really understand where this comes in, but he has this hat that kind of morphs into a mask, and kind of like, it's like an animal. It's weird, he can talk, he's kind of like, you know, like an, I don't know, it's really confusing.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's like this little creature that kind of just chills around, turns himself into a mask, and turns himself into a hat. Eats shit. Yeah, it's fairly confusing. And the kid has a lot of passion for basketball, even though he hates the mech versions. But he has this dream one day to reach the moon, because I guess the moon has, I'm guessing, has some sort of civilization on it that's super wealthy and that could possibly fix his sister's legs. So he has, he's like a, it's kind of cheesy at times. Like, he thinks that he can literally jump to the moon by jumping off of a tall tower and almost killing himself, when you obviously cannot jump out of the atmosphere.
Kids, don't try that at home.
Don't do that shit, okay?
Don't get on top of your house and try and jump to the moon. You will end up dying.
You will die, okay? but okay, he actually goes to a basketball game, which he just fucking does it. Yeah, he goes with this girl. And then all of a sudden he gets inspired to get into one of these machines and start busting some moves and shit. And so he does. He gets in the machine. He crashes the fucking party, you know, like, grabs a basketball, starts doing all these intricate moves that none of them can do. Everyone's cheering, yoo-hoo, waha. This is what basketball used to be. Tear, tear, cry, cry. This is amazing, blah. And, you know, he's about to make a slam dunk. He's crashing everything. He jumps in the air, about to slam the basketball into the hoop. And all of a sudden, this dickhead comes out of nowhere and blocks him. Like, and he says, this is too far. You stop right here. It was like one of those serious moments, serious character, like, you've done something terribly wrong. And it's just basketball. And he swats the ball out of his hand. He goes crashing into the hoop, and there's just, like, mass chaos. Everything's falling down because he's a big fucking robot. And just crashed the whole building. And, yeah. And that's basically episode one. And just, like, the fuck just happened?
So it's a little bit of an equivalent of, like, maybe in basketball, a white dude coming in. You know, saying, hey, look, my fundamentals are so great, I can dribble and pass and things like that, all the things that they used to do back in the 50s before all these black guys got here. And then he goes up to the basket, black dude's just like, bam! You shouldn't have come. And everything is ruined.
He's like, oh, God, pretty much. That's a good analogy. That's pretty good. But, yeah, sorry if that whole storyline was confusing. The whole thing just kind of confused me to begin with. I don't give it any fucks.
You don't give a fuck?
I don't give... Well, maybe a couple. Maybe a couple. I kind of want to see where it goes, if it's as cheesy as it seemed to be. I have a hard time believing it's going to be that cheesy, because I've seen some pretty cheesy shit that's not that cheesy.
So you think it might be get a little better after time?
Yeah, it could get a little better.
We'll see. You give it a couple fucks.
Yeah, I'll give it a couple fucks.
Mm. All right. Another thing here, big news that came out, I think just last week, I believe, Captain America, the Winter Soldier trailer came out.
Oh, yeah.
And X-Men, Days of Future Past came out, which Days of Future Past is one of the most motherfucking cool names of all time. But we'll take a look and see what we thought of the trailer here. We both watched it right before the podcast. First, we'll start off with Captain America. I thought it was pretty badass myself, especially that whole scene with Captain America with the dudes in the elevator, just beats the shit out of everybody. And then we get a glimpse of the Winter Soldier there, where, you know, the guy with the metal arm in the trailer and the long hair, and he catches the shield at the end. You know, I think it looks pretty badass. It's taken it from the 40s movie that was in the beginning to sort of like a current political thriller with a superhero action twist.
Yeah, it was pretty cool how they did that. The transaction was just, I don't know, like, because, like, the 40s, it was just like, you know, old-time war shit, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it almost seemed like, you know, a Indiana Jones-ish or Rocketeer-like movie, where it's very nostalgic about the 40s, which none of us lived in.
Yeah, pretty much. So, like, we can feel like it's easier to relate to this type of style that's been introduced in, you know, the new movie that's coming out. And so, it looks really good. The action looks like there's going to be plenty of action.
Yeah.
Lots of kickassery.
Lots of kickassery.
Hell yeah.
Captain America's got him a new costume here. He's ditched the stripes, which I think he looks pretty badass. And, you know, hopefully they go ahead and, you know, pull the trigger and do a little bit of man at a time sort of character development with him, of like, you know, everything I know is 40s and, you know, what is this iPod here? You know, shit like that. You know, where's the radio? Why aren't there any radio stations?
Well, there are.
Yeah, but they don't play cool things like Gunsmoke. All there is like news and Miley Cyrus.
Oh, man.
did you watch all of the first one?
All of the first Captain America?
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Alrighty, so I'm going to go ahead and drop a little something on you. In this trailer here, the Winter Soldier, the guy with the metal arm and the long hair, looks like this main bad guy in the movie. Uh-huh. In the first Captain America movie, he had his buddy.
Yeah.
That's that guy. Yeah, essentially, he comes back.
Oh.
He's been in the comic book, he gets brainwashed by the Russians soon after the first Captain America movie, and they keep him alive for years and years and, you know, have him be like the perfect assassin.
Damn.
Yeah, and this shit is fucked up.
That's badass.
I know. This is going to be cool, I think. This is going to be cool.
Oh, yeah.
So I give that trailer, like, you know, I give it 4 out of 5 fucks.
A lot of fucks.
A lot of fucks.
This podcast is about fucks.
Yeah, we say the F word a lot, so if you want to go ahead and turn it off, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Now moving on to the other trailer here, X-Men Days of Future Past. Mm-hmm. Now, I think we even watched X-Men First Class together, which was the one that came before this.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
It was the one that took place in the 60s. It had the young Professor X and the young Magneto and shit.
Yeah.
Magneto was pulling out Nazi fillings and shit. It was a good movie. This one essentially is going to take the old movies and link them together with that new movie using time travel. Yeah. It's going to be super confusing, I predict, but it's going to have, like I said, a cool name, Days of Future Motherfucking Past, right? So essentially, there wasn't a whole lot of action going on in this trailer. It looked like a lot of like longing looks and speeches from 70-year-old men. But it looks like Wolverine, who has some gray hair on the side now, has to go back in time to try and convince Professor X to dream again. Something like that.
Yeah, don't be such a dick,
Professor Yeah, he's X. like, stop being a dick, man. You know, you got your hair all long and everything. You need to shave that shit off. Turn into Patrick Stewart, the Professor X that we all know and love. So I think that's what it's about here. Another thing I wanted to add. The villain in the movie is Tyrion from Game of Thrones.
Oh, hell yeah. So if you're a Game of Thrones fan, oh yeah, check this shit out.
The imp. So,
hell yeah.
X-Men fighting a little person.
Hell yeah. Oh, the best. The best. You can't go wrong with that. Okay, you got little people and you got time travel. Okay? Can't go wrong with this. You can't.
Definitely. Man. Two things that make a movie. Little people and time travel. You got a good movie on your hands.
It's going to be awesome. And it's X-Men. You know, X-Men's good. It's great.
Yeah. Nevertheless, I was a little underwhelmed by this trailer, however. So I'm giving this one 2 out of 5 fucks. I'm only giving it a couple fucks.
Yeah, I could see. I could see that. Well, we kind of set the pedestal high. We kind of watched Captain America first, and we were like, oh, that was badass, and all of her, like, we were like, oh, let's see this one, it's X-Men, yeah, let's fucking do it, yeah, and it was just, like, kind of boring compared to it, and he's like, oh, okay.
And that's the thing, I think that's how everybody saw it. I mean, Captain America, the trailer, came out first over X-Men, so yeah. Everybody who was watching online went ahead and saw it that way, and I think, you know, if you're the X-Men, you should have maybe included, because you got to have some action scenes in there, in the movie somewhere. So I think you should have put some in the trailer to kind of give you something like, oh man, here's Wolverine fighting Magneto. Oh, here's Wolverine, Magneto fighting. Yeah, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But you could have got something in there, something for us, a little something, something.
Yeah, the movie definitely, probably the movie, probably, we never know. We never know. There could be so much violence in it, you might puke. We don't know, but
you should have showed it to us in the trailer, because yeah. That'll get our butts in the seat.
Fuck you, X-Men.
Give us something to get our butts in the seat so we can watch the shit.
No, I don't know. Tyrion's got me in there.
I like Tyrion. I probably will see it anyways, but
He's a sexy guy.
Yeah.
He's a midget.
He is the Brad Pitt of, like,
dude,
little people. Of dwarves.
I see that.
He is so handsome. This is about to turn into gay cast, and we're not even gay. But
well, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Oh, no. It's just not us. But yeah, Peter Dinklage is one handsome fella. and to end this on a super gay note, it's time, David, to go kaboom.
Kaboom.
Which is our ending.
Now we do that shit.
Kaboom is our bye.
Yes. Blam. Guts everywhere, blood all over the walls, just...
Blam! We're blown up. We're dead now.
We're dead.
So, you know, maybe come back next week, see if we maybe survived. And thank you for listening. Maybe we didn't survive, and this will just be a blank feed.
There we go.
Kaboom!
Kaboom!
Goodbye.